Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. This week, we'll be talking about how modern media companies are getting young people to take an interest in politics. Here in the UK, we are fresh off the back of a general election. But outside of these big moments, the youngest generation of voters find it hard to engage in politics, despite being badly affected by issues like the housing and cost of living crisis. Young people simply feel disillusioned and they don't feel they have the power to affect change, says this week's guest, Banseka Kayembe, a freelance journalist who set up the news website Naked Politics 9 years ago, straight out of university. Naked Politics is a news publication aimed at young people, which has more recently taken a new approach to this issue, to go directly into schools and colleges to engage with 16 to 18 year olds. She thinks that it's not enough to report on what's happening in the world of politics. Young people especially want more actionable information on what they can do about the problems they're dealing with. And that's a need Banseka is looking to meet. That's all coming up, so don't go anywhere. Banseka, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. Thank you ever so much for coming onto the show.
Hiya, thanks for having me.
We're going to talk a lot today about, you know, young people engaging with not just the election that we had here in the UK last week, but also, you know, political journalism as a whole, which brings us really into what you're doing now with Naked Politics. So tell us a little bit about that that organisation that you've founded.
Yeah, sure. So Naked Politics is a media and educational organisation. We've been around for some time. We actually got started way back in 2015, just after I'd finished being a student at uni. And really, it was a kind of journalism space, all volunteer based, for young people. I think particularly at a time when media and journalism was really bad for young people in terms of what was being offered. In some ways, things are a little bit better now, although it's still bad in lots of other ways. So that was kind of how Naked Politics was kick-started. Since then, in recent years, I think thinking about young people, we've sort of responded to, I think, the real desire for young people to understand politics in a way which feels more practical and feels more real life. So we have gravitated towards a lot of our politics covering people power, community organising, understanding politics from the perspective of how ordinary people create social movements and political change. So that's primarily kind of where our journalism takes us. We still have an interest in what goes on in Westminster and what politicians are doing, but we're always trying to think about it for young people through the lens of kind of people power and how ordinary people think about change, care about change, and what they're interested in, and primarily documenting young people's stories and experiences that I think we often still don't get to hear enough within mainstream media.
Got it. So go over that again with me. Exactly, as a company, what kind of services do you offer? What kind of output do you produce? Talk to me about that for a moment.
Yeah, so on the media side of things, we're producing largely written journalism. So we commission young people to write pieces, whether it's investigative pieces, profile pieces, Q&As, commentary and opinion pieces around political issues that have that kind of youth lens, and that lens particularly around sort of community organising and people power. And we also have social media channels as well, where we do a variety of kind of high-level sort of news coverage, and we do that in-house, just sort of sharing sort of information related to politics and young people. On the other side of things, which is our newer work stream, which we built out with the help of some really cool funders, the Joseph Rowntree Foundation have funded a pilot work stream where we go into schools and educate young people, particularly young marginalised people, on people power, community organising, and on social movements. So trying to fill some kind of an educational gap that there is around democracy, and trying to help young people see that there is a way of participating in democracy that's not just putting an X in a box every few years and then that's job done, which is kind of what we're told.
Yep. So on one arm, you've got your sort of political coverage, your, you know, your journalism output. On the other, you've got this education model where you're, you know, really going into schools. Are the two separate, or are the two joined and informing each other?
I think they are informing each other. The thing that links them together is obviously the whole focus on people power, and a real kind of curiosity about how ordinary people create political change. And I think that's the thing that ties them together. I also think the other thing that ties it together as well is also thinking about journalism as a democratic act, which like feels a bit eye-rolly, because obviously everyone for good reason is very cynical about journalism. for lots of different reasons with regards to the way in which sort of the mainstream media is set up. But I think there is this feeling as well, I hope, with the young people who we commission, that they are doing like good work. They're doing work that informs the electorate, like informs ordinary people and helps them to make choices to be more involved democratically in the society that we live in. I mean, I've referred to it as this idea of civic media, which goes a bit further, I guess, than maybe ordinary media, which kind of delivers people news but doesn't encourage people to do anything necessarily about it, just sort of to almost take in news quite passively.
Yep.
Whereas I think a civic media approach, which I think is closer to what we are building, is much more about, here's your educational starting point with, you know, reading this piece about an encampment, for example, that's going on. Now you take that information and you go somewhere else with it. You know, you join a campaign or you get involved in your local community or with community organising. So it's almost like seeing the journalism as, and the audience's interaction with that journalism as not passive, but as a step potentially towards something else, towards being a more democratically involved citizen in a way that is beyond just voting every few years. It's great if young people vote and we want them to, but we also want them to feel empowered in a sense of agency to do other stuff as well, to be involved in democracy in a much more proliferate sense, which is a kind of, in my opinion, a truer reflection of where democracy should be and is a more aspirational, desirable form of democracy.
That makes a lot of sense. And so if I asked you to put your mission in a nutshell for me, the reason why you do everything that you do, what would it be?
That's a really good question, to be honest with you. I guess it's got to be change, hasn't it? It's got to be for there to be change. And I'm not going to sit here and patronise young people and tell them what that change should be. That's for people to decide. That's for people, I think, collectively to argue and decide. But it has to be to see some kind of a change in the way in which we do things, in the way in which our democracy ultimately operates. And that's obviously a very lofty ideal. I'm not saying I'm thinking about that every single time I edit a piece or every single time I go into a school, but ultimately that is the kind of bigger strategy. You're hoping to see some kind of a change, a sea change in behaviour change, I guess, almost, is maybe the kind of more jargony term for how people are approaching democracy, especially particularly young people in our case.
And is that drive for change why you do what you've done with Naked Politics? I mean, you started this fresh out of university 9 years ago. You do this, I know, on the side when you're also being a freelance journalist. I imagine that's quite a side hustle to have. Is that drive for change also spurring you on personally?
Yeah, it has to, because you wouldn't do this, especially for free, for the amount of time I did it. A long time I was doing this work for free until we got funding. You know, we only got our first piece of funding a year and a bit ago. So for a long time, I was just doing this for free. And as were many other people.
You were doing this for free for 8 years.
Yeah. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. And I probably am a bit crazy.
Well, a lot of people would have thrown in the towel by then. So I'm wondering what kept you going.
But I should also say that I'm very lucky in that it's almost never been just me. Like, there is always a team of people. We've had great volunteers in the past who've done, you know, editing for us, helped out. You know, produced articles for free. It was all volunteer based for a very long time, which is the story of quite a lot of grassroots platforms. I mean, I know Galdem, for example, which unfortunately no longer exists.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they started out for a long time where everyone was just working for free and people couldn't believe it. So I think when you have got, you know, you feel like you're doing something that is important and should be done, there is a sense of urgency, I think, that drives you forward. I think I should also be honest and say that it's also easy in a sense for me to have done some of this, because I think I come from a relatively comfortable-ish background. You know, I'm not a working class person who's doing like shift work and, do you know what I mean? Like, it's struggling to fit this in. I spend a lot of my time at my desk as it is. So it's not always too hard for me to just do a little bit of something else on the side. It's a bit easier. And you know, I've had like, you know, comms jobs that have given me a good stable income in between and all that. So all of that class stuff ultimately, of course, makes it much easier as well. So I should add that in. It's not always easy for everybody to just get up and do this, even if they really, really care.
I get it. But you have been bootstrapping it for the last 9 years then at this point, until you said there was a fund that came in for you last year. Right, tell us more about that and what that means for Naked Politics.
Yeah, that was really significant. The funding game is incredibly hard, especially, I have to say, for media. A huge part of the reason why we were able to get the funding was more of an interest in our school's programme.
Right. This is what a lot of people say, which is that if you are some sort of media adjacent organisation, there aren't specific funds for the journalism side. You have to look to the kind of more peripheral side of things for where there might be some sort of enveloping area that you might be eligible for funding.
Yeah.
So what was the fund that you managed to get there?
Yeah, and I'm not saying, by the way, that's why we do the schools work.
I
came to the conclusion that it made sense for us to go where young people are as well and not just expect them to come to us as a digital online platform.
Yeah.
The funding that we got was from the Joseph Rowntree Charitable Trust. They're very interested in sort of democratic education in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fit into their scope quite well. I worked with them for several months to shape together a proposal that we were happy with. It went through the board, it got approved, which was great, and they've stayed in touch, so we're hoping we can continue a relationship with them. We've also just got a new funder that we've signed with called the Paul Hamlin Foundation, who are actually funding some quite cool radical stuff, including like abolition stuff, which is quite cool, like cooler than what we're doing. We've got some traction with some fairly big funders. There's not many big funders in the UK. I probably named two of the biggest basically already. I'm not sure there's too many after that. There's like one other one and that's it, sort of thing. We're really lucky and grateful to have been given funding for this work. It's really difficult to get this for purely media work. People don't see the value in it. They don't see the outcome in it. They're like, well, what did we get for our money? That's their perspective.
Yeah. I mean, what does that mean now in terms of what you can scale up in terms of your operations?
So hopefully that means we can start to bring on some full-time staff, which is very exciting. When everyone's part-time, that does obviously reduce our ability to be able to do things. It also means we can be less reliant on freelancers as well, which means that in effect we'll probably save money because it is more expensive hiring freelancers all the time in the long run than just actually just paying full-time staff. So we can scale up to that hopefully next level. And I'm hoping that I can eventually quit my full-time role and go into this full-time as well. So hopefully that's on the horizon very soon. So it's very small incremental steps, right? We're literally talking about, you know, a couple of people going full-time or something, potentially, or one person going full-time. It's incremental, but we're plugging away. As you keep going, it gets easier. The last funding application we did was much easier than the first, happened much more quickly. So we're getting there. There's building, there's momentum, but you got to keep going.
Yeah. So the revenue model really for Naked Politics, do you always want to be on the hamster wheel of chasing funding, or are you looking to other means to keep yourself sustainable?
This is the question, really. This is the golden question, and it's something that I think all media platforms, to a certain extent, apart from the really big ones, are having to ask themselves. The advertising model, I don't think, has worked. Partly because they're very fickle, as we can see. So as soon as your advertising money dries up, you're a bit screwed. But also there's an ethical question around the advertising thing as well, because, you know, if that's your main sort of reliance on your income, then potentially you could be beholden to some less than desirable interests that might compromise your editorial standards. And we don't want that either. So I think we're really left with probably looking at more of a membership model. And that's very difficult to build a membership. We've seen some platforms like Navarra Media, for example, appear to have managed to have done it. It looks like it's relatively successful for them, which is really great to see. So we want to kind of keep learning those lessons that other bigger platforms are managing. They were around for a long time as well, I believe, before they started paying people. I don't think they were paying people until maybe several years after they started. So again, it's a very similar story, of kind of, you know, getting this stuff off the ground. So I think if I'm able to move into a full-time role with Naked Politics through the charitable trust funding, which hopefully we'll get, I can start thinking about how we do long-term sustainability and how we make sure that we can kind of support ourselves, because I don't want us to be too reliant on grant funding for too long.
Yeah, a lot of people do. I've said that that's just, it's a hamster wheel that never ends, and it just ends up taking you away from the stuff that you want to be doing, right?
So you spend all your time writing funding proposals and not actually doing the work.
Exactly that. What are the successes of Naked Politics to date? What's the work that you're really proud of? What sort of impact have you seen with the work that you do? Talk to us about that.
I think there's been some really tangible impact on with the schools work that we've done, which has been really fantastic. I think we've probably engaged with around 500 sort of school kids now over the last sort of year and a bit, and we're set to ramp up that engagement. We've built some new relationships with some good partners, which has been really great, including some big academies in London and Essex, so primarily targeted at sort of marginalised young people.
Yeah.
And it's been really good to see the data. So we've got quite fixated on, you know, how do we prove that, you know, we made a difference by coming into the school and educating young people on this. And it's something like around 2/3 of the young people we speak to, who we survey afterwards, tell us that they're more likely to get involved in some kind of democratic action as a result of the sessions that we run, which is really positive. It's only one or two sessions that we're running with these young people, but it starts them off somewhere. Hopefully it sparks something, it keeps them interested, and they know loads anyway. You chat to young people and they give you all kinds of ideas that you haven't even thought of. So I think that's a huge success that we've been able to do that.
Yeah.
And then I guess on the media side of things, I think I'm actually, this is a small thing, but I'm just proud of the fact that we're regulated. I'm proud of the fact we've signed up willingly to a regulator.
Which one? Impress?
Yes, we're signed up to Impress. So we thought they were the most robust,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the standards code that they have. And I'm really proud that when people do have complaints, that we're able to point them somewhere formally and say, please do make a complaint about this, please do raise it to us. Because it's not easy to say, you know, for us to individually decide, you know, we want to be under the cosh. But ultimately, if you care about journalism and good journalism, then you should be doing that, and we should be prepared to be held to account for the journalism that we produce and create.
Makes a lot of sense. What's the age group that you're typically engaging with, you know, young people as a whole? What's the age group that you're looking at?
So in the school side of things, that's sort of 16 to 18.
Right.
Because obviously
college kids, sixth form, that sort of time in their lives.
Exactly. So that sort of older cohort. On the media side of things, that's probably more sort of 18 to 29-ish or 18 to 25-ish.
Righto.
Our age range is 18 to 29, but I do recognise that is a massive range, because you're completely different at 18 compared to 29. Obviously, those are not two groups that feel like they've got a lot to do with one another.
You're making me feel old. Stop it.
Well, I'm older than you by 4 months.
But the 16 to 18, that's an interesting age group, because that's right on the precipice of when they can vote,
yeah.
Right? And when they're really becoming, you know, adults and going into the world and thinking about, you know, the issues that they're going to carry forward with them and that they want to sort of be well informed about. I mean, we just had a joke there, but we're both millennials at the end of the day. And I don't know about you, but I just find myself, you know, identifying with a lot of the struggles that young people have towards not just the media, but also just the political sphere as a whole. Mm. I mean, in those conversations you've had with young people, what's really emerged and what's really left you thinking this is a really big concern that young people are thinking about and grappling with right now?
Yeah, I think there's loads of things. And it's interesting you bring up this point about feeling quite like feeling a sense of solidarity with younger people. Because essentially, I guess you feel perhaps a very similar way to how they feel materially, I'm going to guess. Like, life for younger people in general is just harder materially. And I think that's something we focus on a lot at Naked Politics, and it's something that comes up again and again. If I was to pick out one particular material issue that comes up the most, I actually think it's housing. We're going to be working on some really interesting research, actually, with Generation Rent, who is a research tank looking at renters. And we're going to look specifically at young people of colour and how they're experiencing both renting and living at home. Big issue. Mm-hmm. Lots of young people are just living at home now for much longer periods than they used to. So housing is probably one of the biggest issues that I would say. And it's something that unites a lot of young people across the political spectrum. So I spent a couple of weeks ago, I went down to Clacton to speak to young people about how they feel about reform and Nigel Farage. And one thing that united all young people, whether they were apathetic for Nigel Farage, whether they were voting Labour, whatever, like, housing did come up quite a lot in our conversations as a number one thing, you know, not being able to get social housing, the rents being too expensive, living at home. So that's a really big kind of material issue, and I think it is one of the reasons why young people have now, or a key reason as to why young people now feel like such a politically significant group in a way in which they really actually weren't before. You know, young people used to have a much more disparate voting pattern where, you know, in the 1980s, people forget this, a fair chunk of young people voted for Margaret Thatcher. Now that would be unthinkable. So you've got this kind of real coalescing of younger cohorts of people, not even just Gen Z, but millennials, many of whom are quite a bit older now, in their 30s into their 40s, this kind of big, huge chunk of the electorate now who are all feel like they're suffering materially and who feel, I think, a sense of solidarity with each other because they can see there's that common struggle.
Originally, you told me that the nutshell mission of Naked Politics was about change, right? And mm-hmm. not just young people wanting change, but being changed, living change, being part of that change in some way. What can a media publication today, a modern media publication thinking like Naked Politics, what can they do to help young people, you know, try and live up to that change, be part of it, see it, recognising it, embody it in some way?
I think it's for the media to try and do more dot joining, to try and tie the threads together a little bit, because I think there is this real gap between here's what's happening in politics and here's what important people are doing versus here's the power that you have to change things.
Right.
And, you know, maybe some of those media platforms don't want people to know that. They don't want people to think too much about the collective power that they might have, if I'm allowed to be cynical for a moment. So I think really a sophisticated, genuinely sort of educational media outlet is going to be interested in trying to tie these bits and pieces together and to not just do passive reporting or misreporting of stuff, which of course I think does happen all the time. I think there are certain groups, certain people who get a very hard time in the media as well, quite deliberately, to do that more thread joining and dot joining. Because right now we have conversations about democracy, which is just, here are the important people in this building. They make all the decisions. You can vote them in every 5 years. And if you don't like them, you can vote them out again in the next 5 years. And for a lot of people, not just young people, that's really uninspiring and really... it's not galvanizing, it doesn't make you feel powerful, it doesn't make you feel like you have much autonomy or much say. And so I think there's an awful lot more that the media could be doing to join the dots about how people actually get involved in creating change in between elections. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, give us a good example of how you're joining the dots then. I mean, you talked there about passive reporting. I suppose the opposite might be active reporting. What does active reporting look like at Naked Politics?
So I feel like more active reporting is if, you know, for example, there's a huge interest in young people around, you know, Palestine, for example. Mm-hmm. Let's pick an obvious example of what's going on at the moment. You know, having reporting which reflects the kind of plethora of community activity that's going on to challenge that. You've got student encampments. That's obviously one that young people in particular are kind of highly involved in. You've got the rallies, not just on a national level, the ones in London, but you've also got lots of local rallies as well. I mean, all kinds of random small places in the UK have ended up having these rallies. You saw that during 2020 as well. We had BLM marches in, you know, all kinds of places that you probably never would have expected to see these kinds of activities and these kinds of things. You've got, you know, ways of donating, ways in which you can donate money to various different organisations, writing to your MP, if you're not happy, for example, about X issue, you know, and how you can do that collectively. There's also the boycott stuff as well, which again has been a big feature of the kind of resistance around Palestine as well. So I guess for a media platform that can see that young people are interested in these things but maybe feel a bit powerless, documenting those things and showing young people, you know, that these are the ways in which people are trying to enact change, and also giving it a historical context as well, because I think so much of this is kind of devoid of a historical context. But there are many blueprints for success. Like, it's easy to get beaten down sometimes with the lack of political success because it takes a long time, and I guess that's why it's called a struggle, but there are many blueprints when we look to history, including, you know, lots of working class people, working class black and brown people, queer people, this kind of wonderful coalition of peoples who have created and pushed for the change that we get to live with now and we get to enjoy now. And I also think that kind of inclusion of wider context and reflection is also really, really important and a way of showing people, like, this has been done.
Yeah.
We can do it again.
Not just important, but probably the absence of it is contributing to the disillusionment I think young people feel, that there just aren't, you know, solutions being potentially looked at, that things change might not happen, things might, you know, continue to stay as kind of bad as they are. Basically, I think people just need an injection of optimism, yeah, and positivity, which is kind of sorely lacking as things stand.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was in a school session the other day and we were talking about beating, how do you kind of beat people's natural sense of despondency as a political movement moves forward, and then you kind of reach periods of a bit of an impasse or a lull. And, you know, one of the girls in the session said something really good where she was like, you know, you need to celebrate the small wins. You need to celebrate what you've already done. And I just thought that's actually really smart and really clever. Like, of course you do. You need to remind people this is how far we've come. This is what we've won already. Because within a political movement, there will always be small little wins along the way. It's never straight from nothing to boom, we've got everything. There will be gradual wins along the way that you can remind people are happening to keep them galvanised and keep them moving forward.
Yeah. Fascinating. I mean, so as we think about maybe wrapping up here, what's the one message you'd like to leave our audience with, thinking about the next generation of voters and news consumers, the 16 to 18 year olds who are on the precipice of becoming voters and becoming informed citizens? What's the one message that you have about trying to engage with those people specifically?
Yeah, I think my one message really would be to go where they are. And that doesn't just apply to young people, by the way. I think that applies to, like, everyone. Go to where people are. Don't expect them to just come to you. You can do amazing, really enriching long-term work if you do kind of that grassroots outreach. You go to where people are. You embed them into where you are, which was a decision, obviously, we made as a media platform to be like, we're going to do stuff in real life. So, yeah, going to where people are is immensely powerful. It's not work that will show fruition in a week, 2 weeks, a month, a year's time, but it will do in years down the line. And when you're thinking about, you know, the next election or even the election after that and what kind of a result, you know, people might want to see and might want to galvanize young people towards, going to where they are will be absolutely essential.
Yeah, quick question on that before we wrap up. How will you track the success moving forward of your organization? What means success to you?
It's a good question. I think on the school side of things, it's almost easier because we have got sort of surveys and we collect information about how young people feel before and after the sessions we deliver. So we've got a kind of projection of how those young people might move forwards and engage with democratic action moving forwards. On the media side of things, it's much harder, isn't it? Because if you don't necessarily view your media platform as for profit, which we don't, then how are you measuring the success? Do you measure it?
Memberships, that's on the horizon for you guys, isn't
things
it?
Like memberships, yeah, will certainly be a measure of success for us, I hope, when we can start looking at that. I mean, I'm very skeptical even about social media stats and things like that, and looking at engagement and followers, and you never really know how to categorize how meaningful any of that really is.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think, you know, I will watch this space with keen interest. But Banseka, thank you ever so much for your time speaking with me, and all the best with everything.
Thank you for having me.
My takeaway for today is that a lot of modern media companies feel it is their responsibility now to motivate and mobilise young people politically, a generation of voters and potential voters that feel hard done by and despondent by the lack of progress in the country. Partisan media is, of course, nothing new. Newspapers still to this day back political parties ahead of election day. So what's the difference? Naked Politics is one of a few that feel their mission centres around change, and are not afraid to offer ways on how their readers can be part of this change, whether it's joining a campaign or writing to their local MP. Passive reporting no longer cuts it for this generation, and I think that's the key message for today. What did you take from today, though? I'd love to know. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter/X at JPGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.